Don't worry, Commissioner Silver. I have the plan down pat. What we're going to do is we're going to rig the lottery in favor of the Lakers so Zion goes there and teams up with LeBron. Yep. Yes. Yes. Don't worry. Don't worry. Nobody will suspect a thing. It'll be fine. Trust me. Okay? All right. See you later. All right. Bye. Welcome, everybody, to the Class Act Podcast. I am your host, Barry McCockner. It is Thursday, March 14th, the year of our Lord, 2019. And I want to start out this podcast by wishing Stephen Curry a very happy 31st birthday. There are absolutely no jokes that I could make about Steph Curry being 31. That's right. And what numbers consist of 31? That's right. 3 and 1. And again, there are no jokes that I could make about Steph Curry and the numbers 3-1. There aren't. There just aren't. You know what isn't a joke, though, is the fact that Steph Curry has 0 finals MVPs. And there are not a lot of people born on March 14th without a finals MVP. But Steph Curry is one of the very few people born on March 14th with 0 finals MVPs. So he deserves a lot of credit for that. He deserves a lot of credit for going 0-2 in the fourth quarter of last night's close win against the Houston Rockets. That was an incredible game. But yeah, just again, just happy birthday to Steph Curry. He's turning 31 years old. He's 3-1. That's right, 3-1 Steph Curry. I'll start out the episode talking about the major NFL news this week. I mean, it was just a tsunami. No offense to Asia, but it was a tsunami of trades and signings and bullshit that happened. And quite honestly, it got me hard. And I'm not afraid to admit that, but it got me hard as a rock. So, to start, the biggest move that I think, in my opinion, is the fact that Antonio Brown got traded to the Raiders. So he's going to probably, I don't know. I mean, who gives a shit about the Raiders, really? What do the Raiders do? Like, what are the Raiders going to do? Seriously, like, what, when it comes to the Raiders, you have a franchise that really hasn't been relevant in, like, I don't know, almost 20 years? Like, they made the playoffs a few years ago, but, you know, that was when Derek Carr got hurt. And besides that, it's like receivers and players go there to die. Their careers go there to die. And we don't even know how long Oakland's going to be in Oakland. They're going to be the Vegas Raiders pretty soon. So, like, I don't really know how much Antonio Brown does to help that team. And this kind of goes to the larger picture of that I think wide receivers are the most overrated position in the NFL. A lot of people say running back is the most overrated position, but I don't think so, because I think a lot of people recognize now that running backs are pretty, you know, replaceable. They're pretty interchangeable, kind of like, you know, Tom Brady and the Patriots. Even though he's a quarterback. But, you know, like, wide receivers, like, people and fans especially, like, we love to fawn over star receivers. Whereas, really, the only star receiver to win, there's only really been a handful of superstar receivers in NFL history that have really been on consistent winning teams. I mean, Jerry Rice won 3 Super Bowls. Michael Irvin won 3 Super Bowls. But, I mean, Randy Moss, he got to a couple, but he never won. Terrell Owens only went to 1 Super Bowl. There's so many, like, so many of the greatest wide receivers of all time. Like, you know, you look at Antonio Brown. He went to the Super Bowl as a rookie, but he didn't win. Julio Jones went to a Super Bowl a couple years ago. He didn't win. Like, A.J. Green's never won a playoff game. Calvin Johnson never won a playoff game. You know, like, there's, like, all Larry Fitzgerald's been to a Super Bowl, but he didn't win. Like, there are so many of the greatest wide receivers of all time that have never won a Super Bowl or have only even not even made it to a Super Bowl. And the same goes for Odell Beckham, who was also the big, the other big news, I think, this week, was at least part of one, at least part of the news, was him getting traded from the Giants to the Browns. And Jesus Christ, the Browns are all, like, all of a sudden are like the Browns, like, The Odell Beckham, I like the Odell Beckham move better than I do Brown to the Raiders, because the Raiders, besides Antonio Brown, really, like, what do they have on offense? Like, nothing really. Whereas the Browns, like, they got a bit of a squad now. They got Odell Beckham. They got Kareem Hunt, who's a class act. They got a young quarterback who looks like a star in the making in Baker Mayfield. Jarvis Landry is a good possession receiver. You know, all of a sudden the Browns are, like, for the first time in like 30 years, are the favorites in the AFC North. It's like we're living, you know, in a bizarre world right now. But as an Eagles fan, I'm ecstatic that the Giants are basically tanking away the season, and pretty much every like AFC NFC East divisional opponent is, you know, the Redskins are the Redskins. They're always irrelevant. The Cowboys are always a bunch of smoke, but they're not really they're never any substance, you know. And the Giants are as long as the Giants continue to play Eli Manning, if they continue to employ Eli Manning as their starting quarterback, I will always feel confident against the Giants. So my Eagles are in a great position right now, but I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about Big Dick Nick being sent to Jacksonville. It was a tough scene, but I think in the end it was a right move for both parties. Nick Foles, you know, he gets to go to a place where he's the undoubted starter, and he's got paid a shitload of money, and I hope that he uses some of that money to get a penis reduction, because to be quite honest, folks, it was tough watching Eagles games with Nick Foles as quarterback because his dick was taking up half the screen. It was like the Fog Bowl, only instead of fog, it was a giant dick. Like, it was like every game was like the Dick Bowl with Nick Foles. You couldn't see anything. You couldn't get a good view. And I honestly think that's partly why Alshon Jeffrey dropped that pass in the playoffs, because he was so distracted by Nick Foles' cock. But nevertheless, I'm happy for Nick Foles, but I'm also happy for Carson Wentz, because now Carson Wentz doesn't have to deal with all of the what if Nick Foles is the starter and this and that. So I think in this situation, all parties win. And Nick Foles, it doesn't matter what Nick Foles does the rest of his career, he's always going to be beloved by Eagles fans, and he can do no wrong. So God bless Nick Foles. God bless Big Dick Nick. I will always love you. If you're listening to this, you're probably not, but if by some chance you are, just know that I, Barry McCockiner, love you, and I will always love you. To go back to an earlier point that I was making about wide receivers being overrated, I guess just to summarize, like, we as fans, we love the big highlight catches, and we love physical freaks like Calvin Johnson was 6'5". He was ripped. He could jump. He could run. We love that. But, you know, when it comes to winning, like, having a good scheme is more important. And that's partly why the Patriots have been so successful, is because, you know, they find players to fit their scheme, and they take advantage of the 5-yard contact rules, and they get smart players, and on top of, you know, their receivers being good, which, you know, you would think, by the way, the media talks about the Patriots, that Tom Brady is the only player on the Patriots roster, but, you know, I think a good scheme is more important than having a star wide receiver. Like, a star wide receiver, you know, like, having a star wide receiver is like kind of having a quarterback with a strong arm. It doesn't hurt your team, but it's not necessarily the end-all be-all, you know? So, that's that. The thing is, though, I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about the returns that the Giants and the Steelers got for, you know, Antonio Brown and Odell Beckham Jr., who are, like, you know, both at worst are top 5 receivers in the league. And I know a lot of people, more so for Giants fans, but the Giants got Jabril Peppers. They got a first. I don't know. I'm not looking at the trade right now. Hold on. Yeah, he was traded to the Browns for Jabril Peppers, who's, you know, average. Kevin Zeitler, who's a good player, and the Browns' first and third round picks this year in the draft, which, I'm not a Giants fan, but I think, I mean, that's a pretty decent haul, I think, for a receiver, especially a receiver like Odell, Odell's been sneaky injury prone. Like, he's only started in 5 seasons. He's started 16 games only once. he's missed over he's missed 21 games in his career, which is a decent amount. Antonio Brown has been, on the other hand, has been durable. And let's see, I have the trade here, what the Steelers got in return for Antonio. Yeah, the Steelers deal for Antonio was a lot less. They only got a third and a fifth round pick from the Raiders, which I mean, you know, it is what it is. Yeah, but I think you know, the Steelers, obviously they just wanted to get rid of Antonio because he was becoming a distraction. And that also goes to another former Steeler who was becoming a distraction that the Steelers got rid of, and that was Le'Veon Bell, who is now with the New York Jets. And oh, and just one last thing on the Odell to Cleveland trade. I almost predicted the trade a few days before, in case you don't follow me on Twitter. I literally almost predicted the trade. I picked a random player from the Browns, and I just picked Jabril Peppers in one of my fake trades, and he was actually in the trade a few days later, so that was weird. But I was so close to it, so I'm starting to think maybe I have psychic powers. Who knows? Anyways, as I was saying, Le'Veon Bell, who, as if unless you've been living under a rock, you know that he sat out all of last season for a big payday. Which it's kind of ironic though, because Le'Veon Bell is one of the best running backs in the league, and he's making like the same amount as Evan Turner. Like, he sat out an entire year just to make as much as Evan Turner does in the NBA, who's a scrub. And for the Jets, like, does Le'Veon Bell, does he really move the needle for the Jets? I don't know. I mean, look, in the AFC, look, as long as Tom Brady and the magic horseshoe that he has stuck up his ass is in the AFC East, I just don't really think any move that any AFC East team makes is really going to be relevant in the big picture. I mean, the Patriots are going to win 12 to 13 games. They're going to get a first round bye, while, you know, the Jets, Dolphins, and Bills are all going to toil around, you know, 7-8 wins tops. Like, it's been that way for almost two decades now. You can, you know, it's death taxes, and the AFC East being a no-show when it comes to competing with the Patriots. That's just the rules. And, you know, I think I don't see Le'Veon Bell changing that. I think it's good, though, that at least the Jets are actually trying to, you know, help Sam Darnold a little bit, because, you know, it seems like every year the Jets, when they draft high a lot, because they suck a lot, and when they draft high, they always pick, like, you know, a defensive lineman or something like that. Then you just kind of forget about him. So I think it's good that, you know, the Jets are at least trying to surround Sam Darnold with some playmakers. But in the long run, in the big picture, I don't think it'll matter. But I did think it was funny how, in other Jets related news, Anthony Barr agreed to deal there. And he basically thought it over. He's like, no, fuck that, I'm out of here. That was hilarious. He pulled the Josh McDaniels on the Jets. It was absolutely hilarious. I was laughing my ass off at it. But at the same time, I'm like, you know, like, Anthony Barr, he's a decent player. He's not great. You know, he's not really, like, he's a decent player. He's not good. But, you know, it's still funny anytime you see a player go back on their word in pro sports nowadays, kind of like DeAndre Jordan a few years ago with the Mavericks, or what else is there? Like I said, Josh McDaniels last year with the Colts. But yeah, that was funny. What else happened this week? Big NBA news this week was Russell Westbrook getting involved in a fight with a white fan from Utah. This happened in Utah. Basically, Russell Westbrook said that he was going to beat the shit out of some guy and his wife for talking shit to him. And we don't know exactly what the fan said. Like, there's conflicting reports on it. Russell said that the fan told him to get on his knees or something like that, and that it was racial. But obviously, it's, you know, something foul was said, and it's one of those situations where, like, it's like catnip for Twitter. Like, everybody, whenever they heard that, when they heard the Russell Westbrook
fiasco, it was like, okay, you get to choose either. Are you offended by a white guy talking shit to a black athlete like Russell Westbrook? Or are you offended by Russell Westbrook saying that he's going to beat the shit out of a woman? So it was like, you know, all the SJWs and virtue signaling Twitter, they kind of had to pick sides. So it was pretty hilarious to me. Like, for me, it was like, I shouldn't say, the situation was hilarious. I'm not saying, you know, to be clear, I'm not saying that, you know, beating up women and racial slurs are hilarious, because they're not. And nobody hates racial slurs and domestic abuse more than I do. But in this particular situation, it's funny to see which sides people chose, and especially how people, like how Utah fans reacted, because there were some Utah fans that were like, it's not really a big deal, you know, it's just a narrative and blah, 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 blah. And then there are a lot of NBA players who were like, yeah, Utah is like one of the worst places to play in terms of fans, in terms of, you know, insults from fans. And that's not really surprising coming from a franchise whose best player all time impregnated a 12-year-old. So the standards are not very high in Utah. That's not true. That's not a joke. Karl Malone literally had sex with a 12-year-old, got her pregnant, and like, people were just like, okay. Like, there was, that was it. Like that, imagine that happening today. Like, I don't know how Karl Malone got away with it. The NBA's second all-time leading scorer is a child rapist. The third all-time leading scorer, Kobe Bryant, is a probable rapist. And the fifth all-time leading scorer, Michael Jordan, is a degenerate gambler who smokes like 40 cigars every day. Like, so three of the five all-time leading scorers in NBA history have, like, really, really troubled past. And that's just something to take note of. If you didn't know that already. But overall, when it comes to you know, fans interacting with athletes on the bench, I think there's definitely a fine line between, you know, talking shit to somebody and, you know, insulting somebody or going over the line, because you can insult the player for his game. You can say a player sucks. You know, you could say that he sucks and that he's, you know, he's a brick mason. He's not very good. You know, but to say, like, you know, to tell a guy to, you know, get on his knees and suck your cock. I mean, that's not only is that really suspect, it's pretty degrading. So, you know, again, there's definitely a fine line. Another thing that happened in the NBA this week was Serge Ibaka basically completely lost his shit on a Cleveland player, Marquese Chris. Like, just completely went AWOL, just completely lost his shit, and, like, choked him, and was throwing punches at him, and it was absolutely fucking hilarious. Absolutely hilarious. And you know what's even more hilarious about it? It's because in 15 to 20 years from now, people are going to cherry-pick that clip to say that, you know, back then, basketball used to be more physical. It's, you know, basketball is soft nowadays. It's the same way, like, old heads and, you know, 90s NBA fans, the same way that they constantly shit on players today. That's how it's going to be, like, 20 years from now. People are going to cherry-pick that clip of Ibaka. They're going to use the malice at the palace, you know, things like that. Like in 5 to 10 years, when Zion Williamson is averaging, like, a 35-point triple-double on 75% shooting, there's going to be people that say he couldn't have survived, you know, in the 2010s, because it was too physical for him. That's just how it works. That's how basketball works. That's one of the most annoying things about basketball. I know I've gone over this plenty of times in the podcast about, you know, people overrating their own era. But in basketball especially, it seems like it's worse than other sports when it comes to romanticizing the past. But it's just funny because you can cherry pick anything. Like, you see all these you know, vintage NBA accounts that they cherry pick. You know, like, they'll have 2 or 3 minute clips of fights from, you know, the 80s and 90s, and with the captions like, back then, basketball was for men, you know, and bullshit like that. And, like, you know, I could cherry pick, first of all, the Malice at the Palace, which happened in LeBron's era, by the way, was far worse than anything that ever happened on the court in Michael Jordan's era, okay? Because, you know what would have happened at the Malice at the Palace, okay? Jermaine O'Neal, if he didn't slip on a wet spot, he would have literally killed a guy. He would have literally punched a fan's head off. Go back and look at the clips. A wet spot actually saved the NBA. Because what happened if Jermaine O'Neal didn't slip and his, you know, his punch power wasn't decreased from the slippage? He would have just fucking knocked that fan's head straight off, would have given him brain damage, would have paralyzed him or killed him, and that would have been such a black mark on the NBA. The fact that a player, a star player, because at that point Jermaine O'Neal was coming off like a top three MVP finish. Jermaine O'Neal was a marquee player at that point in time, and he literally almost killed a fan on national television. I don't know how the NBA would ever fully recover from that. You talk about concussions and shit that are hurting football. This is a whole nother level when it comes to basketball. Literally murdering a fan. And the NBA got saved by a wet spot. And then you know, you can cherry pick, like there was a clip back when Carmelo Anthony was with the Nuggets, when in Madison Square Garden he got in a fight, he got suspended for throwing punches and shit like that. And you got this Ibaka situation. You had the Meta World Peace elbowing James Harden in the playoffs, or not in the playoffs, but he, you know, elbowing James Harden in the neck and injuring Harden. Like, so you can make any era of basketball look tough. The difference is that, you know, athletes are better, athletes are more skilled, players are more skilled today. And that's just the fact. If you don't like it, you can go fuck yourself. I don't feel like hearing it. I'd be remiss if I did not talk about the fact that I got name-dropped on NFL Network. I literally got name-dropped on NFL Network by Mike Garofalo. And this is in relation to all the, you know, fake tweets that I'm doing and all the fake trades that I do that fool people. And I got name dropped on NFL Network by Mike Garofalo, who's one of the, you know, premier NFL reporters. And it was absolutely fantastic. It's like last year for me, how I got one of my MJ threads, my thread that was basically, you know, cherry picking clips, that shit on the 90s NBA that got so many people riled up. I basically, and then I got put on The Jump on ESPN NBA. This is like the NFL version of that. And it's funny because it's almost like the same time of year. It's just been incredible. It was amazing to get name dropped like that. But you know what? I'm trying to stay humble. I'm not trying to have this success go to my head, because you know what? You just got to take it one day at a time. And you can't get too full of yourself. And I'm holding myself to that standard. I am not going to let this get to my head. Although it is pretty fucking awesome. You know, not to brag, but I'm getting kind of tired of fooling all these verified accounts. Just kidding, I'm not getting tired. It's fucking hilarious every single time. It's hilarious every single time to fool verified accounts. Because, again, it doesn't even take half a second. I could understand a few years ago before Twitter added the verified checkmark next to people's names. Like, Twitter literally went out of their way to add the verified checkmark just so it could be easier to recognize fake accounts. And god damn it, I'm still able to fool like two or three minimum blue checkmarks every time I do a tweet. Or whenever I do a fake tweet, like a fake sports or a fake trade or shit like that. It's like Prime Shaq. Like, you know it's coming. You know I'm gonna impersonate a sports reporter, and yet you can't stop it. You can't stop it. It's just unstoppable. And you know that to me that's hilarious, because to see how mad people get once they realize they've been fooled. It's like, hey pal, it's your fault that you're too stupid to not recognize that I don't have a verified checkmark next to my name. And thank God I don't have a verified checkmark next to my name, because if I did, I honestly believe we would be in a nuclear holocaust right now. Because if I impersonated Donald Trump with a verified checkmark next to my name, oh boy. Right, you talk about, there'd be some nuclear bombs being fired, folks. There'd be some nuclear bombs being fired. I don't know which country. I'm putting my money on North Korea, because that little fucking midget there who runs their country is very unstable. But I mean, there'd be a good chance at a nuclear holocaust happening if I got verified. And so, even though on one hand I would love to be verified, I understand that in for the safety of the rest of the world and the rest of this planet, it's better that I not be verified. And I understand that. As disappointing as it is. All right, I'm going to do something in honor of Serge Ibaka's fight. I'm going to talk about the top three NBA players that I would want on my side in a fight. I'm going to do all time. The first person I would want on my side in a fight is it has to be Ron Artest. Ron Artest, I don't think any player ever in NBA history is more mentally unhinged than Ron Artest. I mean, this guy, I mean, goodness gracious. I mean, like, there are actual clips, like, of there was one clip a few years ago when Ron Artest was on the Knicks where he was playing against the Raptors and Tyler Hansbrough, like, he fouled Tyler Hansbrough, like, gave him, like, a hard foul. And Hansbrough didn't see who it was. And Hansbrough, like, turned around and he got up and he was trying to act tough. And then he saw that it was Ron Artest who fouled him. And he kind of was like, oh, okay, and he cowered away. And that's exactly what you want to have your back in a fight. You want to have somebody who instills fear. And, I mean, players were fucking afraid of Ron Artest, okay? And rightfully so, because that motherfucker was crazy enough to go into the stands and punch people, okay? And also the fact that, you know, you never knew what was going to happen with Ron Artest, because when it looked like he was going to, you know, be rehabilitated for good, he goes and he elbows the shit out of James Harden and gave him a serious head injury back when Harden was still in OKC. It's just that. So yeah, Ron Artest, I'd like to have him on my side. The second player that I'd like to have my back in a fight is definitely Magic Johnson, because, you know, nobody wants, you know, Magic Johnson, like, you don't want any of his blood to get on you. You just don't. And the opponent, like, people, once they see Magic Johnson, they're like, hey, I got to be careful. I got to be hesitant. I don't want to be too aggressive, you know, because something might happen. Something weird might happen. So Magic Johnson would be another one I'd want to have. The third player I'd want to have my back in a fight is Gilbert Arenas, just because there's a non-0% chance that Gilbert Arenas would whip out a gun and shoot somebody. And because, I mean, that's actually what happened. Like, that's almost what happened. And it was over some bullshit. Like, Gilbert Arenas is like cut of the same mold of Ron Artest. Not quite as mentally unstable, but Gilbert Arenas was a guy who literally shit in teammate sneakers and things like that. And he got in, like, you know, he drew his gun over some stupid little thing. I forget what it was, but I mean, Gilbert Arenas was another way, way out there mental guy, and a guy who, you know, had that crazy look in his eyes. So I would not want, I wouldn't want to mess with Gilbert Arenas. And so that's why I'd rather have him on my side. In other NBA news, there was this kind of goes back to the Russell Westbrook incident, only it wasn't a player who got into it with a fan. It was an owner, and this was James Dolan, who owns the Knicks. And James Dolan, by pretty much all accounts, is probably the worst owner in the league. It's either him or Robert Sarver from Phoenix. There, you know, it used to be Donald Sterling until Sterling, got caught saying racist shit and they banned him. But for like the last, you know, for ever since Dolan's taken over the Knicks, they've been just absolutely horrible, save for, you know, a year or two. But they've just been horrible since Dolan took over. And in the clip, you know, Dolan basically banned a fan for saying, you know, for the fan told him that he needed to give up the team, and Dolan basically banned him. And I thought that was pretty cool. So, I don't think it was cool. I mean, I don't give a shit. I mean, in all honesty, I think Dolan did the fan a favor, because, you know, I mean, why would you subject yourself to having to watch the Knicks? I mean, that's like torture. So, in all honesty, I think James Dolan was looking out for the fan's well-being. And I think the fan should honestly give James Dolan a thank you card, maybe send him a box of Russell Stovers, something of that nature. Because this is like a spin zone here, but I think James Dolan did the fan a favor. And I think if the fan is a class act, he'd thank James Dolan for it. Because I know I wouldn't want to watch the Knicks, and I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy. All right, let's go back to football for a little bit here. I can't remember a team being more unlikable in any sport than the New England Patriots. At every level of their organization, their owner is a guy who was potentially involved in a sex trafficking ring. Their owner, Robert Kraft, he looks like a horny toad. Their coach, Bill Belichick, is a notorious Grinch. He's a Scrooge who's just constantly pissed off and constantly. I actually kind of like Belichick, but he's a miserable guy. He's miserable. He's a proven cheater. Their quarterback is a guy who makes out with kids. He makes out with kids. He's a cheater. He's just a plain weirdo. He's a system QB. He's not very talented. Just everything that the Patriots do. And plus, their fans, Patriots fans, are absolutely horrible people. Patriots fans are the type of people, and they're doing it. They still do it to me, where they look up my family and they post pictures of me, private personal pictures of me and my family, to harass me with. It's pretty disgusting. But, you know, every level of the Patriots, from their owner to their coach to their quarterback to their fans, are just so unlikable. And they somehow got even more unlikable when they traded for Michael Bennett, who is one of the biggest frauds. And he was with the Eagles last year. And I'm so glad. Michael Bennett's a good player, but I'm so glad he's not on the Eagles anymore, because I hate Michael Bennett. He was a guy who beat up, you know, in case you don't know, he beat up like some 66 or some 60-year-old person. He's on trial for that, and he famously lied about being beat up by the police in Las Vegas. The guy's just, and he's just a complete douche. And so is his brother, Martellus, who notoriously quit on the Packers, basically tried to say that the team doctor for the Packers, you know, like tried to get him to play when he was hurt, and pretty much every single notable Packers player, past and present, basically came out and called Martellus on his bullshit. And then Martellus, after, you know, getting released by the Packers, went right back to the Patriots. And then he retired, and now he's thinking of coming back to play with his brother Michael. So the Patriots just continue to somehow find ways to become more and more unlikable. I didn't think it was possible, but somehow they just keep finding ways to become more and more unlikable. And I swear to God, the NFL is going to be so much more enjoyable once the Patriots are done winning Super Bowls. And I don't know when that'll be. The word is that Tom Brady is going to sign, like, I don't know, 3 or 4 year deal. I don't know. But Tom Brady said he wants to play till he's 45. So that's like 4 more years. So we have to go at least 4 more years of listening to the media fawn and suck Tom Brady's dick for throwing 5-yard checkdown passes to open receivers. That's just, you know, that's what we have to deal with for at least another 4 years. Hopefully we can survive it as a nation and as a country, but I don't know. But I do know one thing, and that Patriots fans will not be any less obnoxious now in 4 years than they are now. You can guarantee that. I'll end the podcast by talking about something that I don't talk a lot about, and that's LeBron James. And in my humble opinion, I think LeBron really fucked himself in the ass by going to LA, because Magic Johnson and Rob Pelinka are fucking idiots. They don't know what they're doing. And I think that LeBron should retire from the NBA for good and see if he can join the Cleveland Browns. Because he already broke the Cleveland sports curse when he brought a title back to Cleveland in 2016. Imagine how much his legacy would skyrocket even more if he joined the Browns and helped them win a Super Bowl. You're telling me that a guy who's 6'8", even though he's 34 years old, you're telling me that an athletic freak like LeBron couldn't benefit a football team in some way? Get out of here. I mean, I could honestly imagine if LeBron was the one that ended the Patriots dynasty. At that point, I think even the biggest Jordan fans would have to admit that LeBron's better than Jordan. If LeBron, you know, caught a game-winning touchdown pass against the Patriots in the AFC Championship game, or if LeBron intercepted Tom Brady like that, I think that would put LeBron over the top in a lot of people's minds as better than Jordan. At least it would for good. I mean, I already think LeBron's the best ever, but in my opinion, that would make it undebatable. So I think LeBron, he should skip out on the Lakers, because the Lakers fucking suck. What are the Lakers going to do? Like, what free agents are they going to get? We don't know. It doesn't look good. So it doesn't look like the Lakers for the next, you know, 3 years. LeBron has 3 years left in LA. He's not going to do anything. You might as well retire, and you might, you know, because you're playing for a fan base who hates you, They're never going to love you as much as they love Kobe. You might as well retire and just go back to Cleveland. You might as well go back home, help them win a Super Bowl, and put yourself over the top for good in terms of all-time legends in sports. And that's my opinion. LeBron, if you're listening to this, follow my lead. I understand what I'm talking about because I'm a doctor. All right, folks, that concludes this episode of the Class Act Podcast. If you haven't already, you can go on iTunes and give the podcast a 5-star review, maybe leave a comment. That would be very greatly appreciated. But I just wanted to let everybody know again that I really, really appreciate all the support that I've been getting. I really, really love making people laugh, and I love making people's days better, even if that's just by making somebody laugh from doing some stupid shit or fooling somebody on Twitter. You know, that makes me feel good. It makes me make to know that I'm making a positive difference in somebody's life that I'll never even meet, probably. That feels good. But I'm just very, very thankful for all the support that I've gotten. And I just want everybody to know that I do not take it for granted. And I hope that we can continue to do big things together in the future. Stay classy and respect the troops.